हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So from the beginning here, then, we're establishing that the mind is real. The mind being real, then, is something that has to be dealt with. In fact, it's actually the central feature of material existence. Because the spiritual existence, then, its main feature is that one is absorbed in a particular affection for Krishna. And because of that affection, then one is, how to say, manifests a certain form. Right? So in other words, according to the particular attraction and attachment one has for Krishna, a particular form is manifest. Right? That's how the spiritual system is working. So the same system works here. Is that there's not different formulas for anything in the cosmic creation. They're the same formulas. It's just the application may be different. But the formula is the same. Depending upon what the mind is attracted and attached to, that's the particular form you'll have, and that's the particular activities you will do with that form. Right? So if the attraction attachment is spiritual, it's Krishna, then you'll have a spiritual form. If the attraction attachment is material, then you'll have a material form. So the whole point is actually the mind. Because the mind is connected to the senses, so all action is happening because of the mind. The mind does not move, the body does not move. Right? If you don't have a desire to do something, then it doesn't happen. Right? And to that degree that desire is there, then that activity becomes more, enthusiastic, more focused, more directed. Does that make sense? So the mind is the central feature in all this. So then Prabhupada's mentioning here the mind is generated from goodness. So therefore, engaging the mind in the Lord's service brings it from its natural state of goodness to pure goodness. But if one doesn't do that, then the tendency is, even though it's generated from goodness, it will try to control and enjoy the material nature, which will drop it into passion and ignorance. Then all the problem starts. Right? Because the mind, its natural function does not work well in passion and ignorance. Right? It works at minimum well in goodness. Right? Following the Vedic rules and regulations in the mood of detachment, like that, it works very nicely. Right? It's peaceful. But as soon as then one wants to enjoy the material energy more grossly than this, then all the problems come up. So that then is the point, is that now if the mind therefore is focused on the Lord, it brings it to its natural state of attraction, attachment to the Lord. Therefore the activities become spiritual. And with time, since we're here, the form will become spiritual. Right? What we have now will be spiritualized, it will become spiritual. So it's the same process. It's not something different than the devotional process. But the idea is we have to be very, very careful that we are performing the devotional process. Right? Because the point in here is the connection to the Lord. It's not the form. Right? The form is important because it's how you're going to do something. Just like you want to cook lunch, you're going to use pots and pans. But when you sit down to eat, how important are the pots and pans? Right? You eat the pots and pans? You talk about what a great pot it is? Wow, this lunch is great. You must have fabulous pots. Right? Is that how it goes? No, it's nothing to do with that. But you don't get the cooked meal without the pots. Right? It's very obvious. Right? You go to your friend's house, you get in your car, you drive there. So when you get there, then you talk about your ride? No. But without it, you don't get there. So the same way as the rules and regulations, the Vaidhi Bhakti, all the aspects of the sadhana, the varnashram, dharma, all the etiquettes, these are very important. Without them, you're not going to get to the platform of love of Godhead. No ifs, no ands, and no buts. But that's not the main point. You identify with those, you don't get to prema. Right? So this ability to work with both of these simultaneously is very, very important. It means if you want to get to Braja Vrindavan, you've got to be able to accommodate this. You want to get to Vaikuntha, then don't worry about it so much. Get into your rules and regulations, get stuck there, and it'll work for you. Right? Because in Vaikuntha, they still learn the rules and regulations. It matches the mood very well. So there's a consistency there that is quite obvious, and you absorb yourself in the Lord through the performance of the rituals of devotional activities, and you'll be doing that eternally. So it works nicely. Straightforward, very simple, very easy to understand. But worship in Braja means you're performing the activity, but it's not the activity that's the most important. Right? It's the particular show of affection that's important. Right? So this is the whole point, is that this conditioned mentality of, well, if the rules aren't actually the thing, it's bhakti, then we throw the rules out. Right? It's just so cheap. It's so modern. It's so pragmatic minimalist. You know? It's so bourgeois. You know? You can go on and on with all these nice terminologies that express the present day environment. But it has absolutely no reality in getting you out of the material world. You want to be successful, you want that business, you want that money, you want that car, you want your position, go for it, it'll get it for you. All these things will get it for you. But it won't get you Krishna. Right? On their own. Right? Here, Prabhupada is making this point here. If you simply stick to the principle, gopi bhartu padakamalayor dasa dasanu dasaha, that I am nothing except the eternal servant of Krishna, then you are in the liberated platform. Krishna consciousness is so nice. You keep yourself. And for keeping yourself in that consciousness, the simple method is this chanting, Hare Krishna. You keep yourself chanting as many hours, 24 hours. Why as many hours? 24 hours. Kirtaniya Sada Hari. Lord Chaitanya says, this is to be practiced 24 hours. And that you can do. It requires simply practice. Even in sleeping, you can chant Hare Krishna. Even in sleeping. And there is no bar. In sleeping, in eating, in going to the toilet room, there is no restriction. You can go on. Hare Krishna. You see. That will keep you in your sarup, in your real identification. You'll never be attacked by Maya. No, it's not that one. It's this next one. Okay, so that's the simple point, is that the chanting always goes on. Okay, so it can be done any time, even in sleeping, right? When you're sleeping and you're worried about something, and anxiety is going through your mind all through the night. So chanting can also do the same thing, right? So here's that thing. So that chanting, that's the essential point. Now to engage the conditioned nature, then we deal in all these other forms, these external forms. If Varnashram, this is another quote, this is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Brahman and Vaishnava. I think it's 15 of the introduction. The Varnashram and other fruitive activities enjoined in the Shastras become prominent in one's life, then one cannot become kinchana, or fully dependent upon the Lord. Rather, these activities provoke offenses against the chanting of the holy names in the form of conceptions of I and mine. If a person who is fully surrendered to Krishna becomes proud of following Varnashram principles, then it must be considered he has become most unfortunate. Due to the influence of association with women, the whole material world is daily advancing in aversion to Hari. So, we can see here is that this form is very important. But at the same time, if you identify with the form, you got a problem. Right? The boy is, how do you say? Giving a gift to the girl. Right? So it's the gift that is the medium for exchange. Now if he identifies, I am the gift, then what's going to happen? You understand? Where is the interaction going to happen? Because he's identifying as the gift. Right? So how do you express anything except through a medium? You have to use language of some variety. Right? Either spoken or abhinai, you know, from the facial features and other physical features of how movement, right? You have some field has to be there, something through which is expressed. But the important thing is what you're expressing, right? So then in the sadhana, we practice the performance of these activities, right? These activities are performed. And we practice how to this form should be done until we get the form right. But when we get the form right, if we identify with it, you've made a mistake. Right? You're talking to somebody, if you think, I am this language, it's going to be a problem. Right? Because how does that language interact with the other person? You're interacting through the medium of language. Right? So the Varnashram is a medium for which you show your appreciation for Krishna through serving Him and engaging body, mind, and words in His activities. But if you become those identities and activities, how is that relating to Krishna? Then it's not you relating to Krishna. Right? So this is the thing is how the mind tricks. This is what the mind does, is that on the spiritual platform, then the spiritual form and all those things are non-different from its transcendental desire. But in the material world, then the activities and things that go on here are non-different from our material. Excuse me, did I say material last time? Yeah, it's supposed to be spiritual. And then this is non-different from our material. Does that make sense? So what happens is that here, in engaging, you want to engage in an activity. So there's going to be a field in which this activity is present. Right? So then those elements within that field, one will contemplate, because you have to understand what all the elements, how is their relationship, what is going to actually get done, what it is that you want to do in this field. Right? And you'll have your natural attractions to what elements you want to use in this field. So this way the mind enters the field, and those things that are important within the field to you for accomplishing your results, you know, what it is you want to accomplish that result, so that enters the mind. So this is material consciousness. Right? Very simple. So now what happens, you identify with that. So basically what you do is become dead matter. In effect, you're as good as dead matter. That's the difficulty. because we identify with it. So here he's making the point that this gopi bhakti pada kamalayor is that you're using this, but you're not identifying with it. And as soon as you identify, I am servant of Krishna, you're liberated. You're not on the material platform. It's actually that simple, that easy. Yeah, that's okay. Then, so, the idea is that one is very careful to perform one's duties very nicely. Know exactly, okay, what is my position in the Varna Ashram? What is my particular duties? How to particularly affect them? You know, I'm a manager. How to manage nicely? I'm a preacher. How to preach nicely? How to do whatever I'm doing very nicely for Krishna? Because why? The result is for Krishna. But now if we identify with that whole process, that this is us, then it's not us serving Krishna, it's that dead matter. And the dead matter already is serving Krishna, because as we discussed before, it's already Lakshmi and she's already doing her service to Krishna. But she, you don't get any credit for that. She's doing her service, but you're not technically doing yours. Externally, yes. But technically, no. And just because you reject Varnashram saying it's external, like Lord Chaitanya says, doesn't make any difference, doesn't make you more internal. Internal is the mood in which you perform the external activities. Right? Unless, of course, it's Satya Yuga, then you just sit down in meditation and do that for 60,000 years, and then after that time, then you can, you know, get some credit. But if that's not the case, if you don't have 60,000 years, or sometimes Bhagavatam says 10,000, some did it in 10,000. I think no, Kardama was 10,000 or 6,000. I can't remember. Some of them were 10,000, some of them were 60,000. So you don't have 10,000 years. Okay, we work on the quicker thing here, you know, we've got less time. So if you don't have that, it's not going to work. Right? So that means then one has to be able to perform an activity. So one has to be careful is that the activity and the mentality go together. Basically, if you check any difficulty you have in any relationship anywhere, that there's a problem, it's because you're not combining these two. You're performing the activity, the mood's wrong. Or the mood's right, the activity's wrong. It's that simple. If it's going to break down your relationships with Godhead, why wouldn't it break it down with everybody else? Right? They're His parts and parcels. They will also have similar, in small amounts, the same kind of, you know, desires and ways of dealing. So if it doesn't work with establishing a relationship with God, why would it work with anybody else? So all of the problems, spiritual and material, come from this. One can't combine them. Now, if you combine them nicely, then it'll work on the material platform. Problem is, you'll stay here. You won't go back to Godhead. So one has to be able to separate that I'm working these things nicely, but I don't identify with them. Because what happens is the mind identifies with them. That's what creates mundane consciousness. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? Sorry, you had a question.
The analysis of the point of liberation that the brother brings out on the verse of 24-hour meditation, and also taking from what you expanded yesterday. So, in this position, at least I myself feel it as a tathagata jiva. Obviously, if the jiva becomes liberated, it's not any longer tathagata.
But the tathagata is a position in that. Because in the liberated state, one is still, that is actually the pure state of tathagata.
Actually, the question was exactly about if you could elaborate, because the stages of liberation are so diverse, right?
Okay.
From the impersonal to what is actually the pure soul.
Okay.
So, in this side, not just already in this spiritual, let's say, already contemplation of the soul, but yes, okay. In this side, if there is not for 24-hour meditation and consciousness even in the sleeping stage, therefore, if I am a spiritual spark, Brahman, I will be relating in a personal way, according to the proportion that I am conscious 1 hour, 2 hours before or far out. So the analysis then is always from this side. What is the interrelation actually, the mind and the intellect? Because I sometimes skip in my focusing, the mind takes me and I forget. So in essence, if you can elaborate about where faith arises and how
faith, where faith arises in that. So you could hear? Huh? No. So question basically is that we were discussing here, Prabhupada saying is that by our method of liberation is establishing ourselves as a servant of Krishna. The identity is servant of Krishna. Because liberation or conditioning is actually a state of existence. So that means the state of existence is defined in Sambandha Gyan. So if your Sambandha Gyan is mundane, your existence is mundane. If the Sambandha Gyan is spiritual, your existence is spiritual. So if you identify as servant of Krishna, you're not in the material sphere. If you identify in any way with the material, you're in the material sphere. Right? So then the question comes up is that as a conditioned living entity, we're not talking about once we get to the liberated state, but as a conditioned living entity, right? Then when we're not actually Krishna conscious, when those moments that we're not identifying as Krishna's servant, are we dealing, therefore, or it would appear, therefore, we're dealing with Krishna in the impersonal, from the impersonal platform. So how to rectify that or how to move that forward? The important element here, then, is the definition of devotional service as given by Baladev Vidyabhushan. Is that whatever is in connection to Krishna consciousness, then is counted as Krishna consciousness. Right? So the process of sadhana bhakti, even though technically it's not bhakti, because bhakti means you have love, but the process of sadhana is still counted as bhakti because the living entity is aspiring for that. Right? So if the goal is connected to Krishna, then the process becomes spiritualized. So even though we may be still dealing in that way, it's not actually prominent on our consciousness. So it's not counted. You know what I'm saying? Like the child, you have the very small, like Krishna, Nanda Baba asked for his shoes. And so Krishna, you know, goes and picks up his shoes and not in a very expert way brings those shoes. But because he's not thinking, yes, I am very expert in all these, I'm very coordinated, I'm so efficient in getting things done, then no one considers that as part of the process. The process is simply seeing the endeavor to actually try to please. It's not the expertise of that. Or Krishna Mother Yashoda asked for something. He goes, you know, the pot for churning, he goes over and tries to pick it up. So he just puts his hands there. But he can't do anything. He just goes, like this. And so all the gopis laugh because he's trying, you know. So in the same way, as because our consciousness is not thinking, yes, I'm great on this impersonal meditation and process, therefore it's not taken as into consideration. What will be considered, taken into consideration, is that you're doing it for Krishna. Right? So that's why it's so important not to identify with it. Like that. If by habit you're identifying, it's still not taken as an important thing. It's just habit is going on, that happens. Like that. But, let me say. But if we start to identify with it, think we are very good at this and we're very expert, I'm a very expert manager, there I am management and all these different things, that's when then the fault comes in. Right? Then it's counted. Before that, it's a fault, but it's not counted. You know, it's just like the kid in first grade can't read, but nobody counts it as a fault because he's learning the letters, he's learning the process. You know, but if he was in 12th grade and he can't read, then we might say there's a problem here. Right? So, in the sense, but if the little kid, the first grader, thinks, yes, I'm a great scholar and all that, and, you know, all these different, you know, great writers, you know, move aside, you know, Nobel Prize, here we come, like that, then you might kind of tell them that, you know, no, your place is actually here, you know, like that. You know, just because you can read Dr. Seuss doesn't now make you a great, you know, how you say, scholar, like that. So that would be the element, that's why the element of sincerity. It means Krishna was pleased with Lord Brahma, mentions in the second canto, because of his sincerity. His sincerity was that he wanted to do these things to please Krishna. Not that what he was doing was so expert, like that. But it was that he did it to please Krishna. Therefore, the process works. That's why if you identify as servant of Krishna, you're liberated. Right? Like that. So, that is these whole things. So we have this hard and soft side, this thunderbolt and the rose. As long as we're humble, the rose is applied. As soon as we become proud, then the thunderbolt is pulled out. And so, therefore, the element, it appears confusing, but this is also back to the first point we were making in the class about this ability to accommodate these two conflicting elements. You have the form, which is important, but it's actually what's the expression that is being given through the form that's more important. But it can only be expressed through the form, so they go together. Right? So in the same way is that this sincerity to perform an activity, the result is for Krishna, you're trying to do it to please Krishna, without the false ego, then that combination works very nice. Right? But if we become proud, then the process is lost, because then we are identifying again with the material energy. We're going back into material energy. Just because you go back into material energy from a very sophisticated platform doesn't make it any less material energy. It probably gives the example, is that if you're bound by an iron chain or you're bound by a gold chain, you're still bound. You're still in the material world. Though you can show off, you know, your gold bling, you know. Yeah, check out the gold bling here, you know, like that. Your iron ball only weighs, you know, 50 kilos, but this is gold, so it weighs 150 kilos, you know. Check it out, how much gold. But that means you're, you know, three times more, you know, unmobile, right? So, but whatever it is, you know, it works, you know. I mean, now they put the chain, you know, from the loop into the pocket. There it's, you know, from the ankle to the ball, you know. So it's like, no, it's just another, just give it some time, it'll become popular. It's like that. So, there's these fine points of just identification. So, the idea is this: is to get it where we can appreciate this and understand this, right? Then Maharaj will go into the different points of very finely how to identify the difference between, you know, the identifying with the material energy and not, or how to do that. But as you said, is that without the faith, then that mood of sincerity that is being done to please Krishna and the focus on trying to develop that and make it. So Brahma was appreciated for his sincerity, not for his expertise. And that's Brahma. Right, so there's basically nothing we can do in the way of expertise that we can consider good. So it's always going to be sincerity. You know what I'm saying? That's what Krishna looks for. Expertise is nice, but the point is that the expertise comes with practice. So more important is the mood, but the problem is when practice is there and expertise comes, then pride can also come. And as soon as pride comes, it's ruined. Because Krishna's not proud of being God. But it comes natural to him. He doesn't have to prove it to anybody. He was God before anybody else existed. Right? You know, or at least in a manifest state. Right? So, therefore, and he was quite satisfied. He was Atmarama, so he didn't have to, you know, get anybody's attention and, you know, says, you know, hey, check that out. Am I a great God? You know, it's like that. He says, what do you think? You know. You know, like that. You know, mother just showed, comes running in, mother showed, oh, you're such a nice little God, you know. Like that. Don't worry, when you grow up, everybody will worship you. You know, he doesn't have to do all that. He's very satisfied. You know, like that. Is that okay? So the faith then means the sincerity can be there. If there's no faith, all you have is expertise. And if all you have is expertise, you have to identify with something. Faith means you identify as servant of Krishna. Therefore, through sincerity, you will become expert. Right? But if you don't have the faith, you will become expert, but through material identity. So even though it's very sophisticated, it's still you're in the material world. It's a problem. Right? Does that make sense? So sophistication isn't the symptom of advancement. Right? Sincerity is. Like that. That's there. One second. You had something? How much does Krishna accept that, okay, we're performing our service, we're trying to do it nicely for Krishna, but so many other desires are there in our life. So how much does Krishna accept their sincerity or not? Basically speaking, he accepts their sincerity on how much you want him to. You know what I'm saying? Because he reciprocates with you how you surrender to him. You know what I'm saying? So if you think God is so, you know, strict and all that, so therefore if I do anything wrong, then, you know, it's just a matter of time before that thunderbolt coming out of the sky gets me and I'm this little pile of ash sitting there. Right? Like we do in most religions. So that's why we see is you can tell us is how much we can forgive others. We can forgive others. If you can't forgive others and anybody makes a mistake and they're eternally damned, then basically you're in the same boat. Not because God works like that, because he reciprocates with you as you surrender to him. Does this make sense? So the point is if you're sincerely trying to serve, then even the desires are there, that doesn't matter, because in your sincerity you will try also to connect those desires to Krishna, and to that degree that you're successful, that to that degree Krishna is pleased. Right? Does that make sense? It means the degree of success is how much you're trying to connect them, not in how expertly you have connected them. You know what I'm saying? Because if you're sincere that you want to, Krishna will give the intelligence. Krishna says, I'll give the dami buddhi yogam ta. I will give you the intelligence how to come. You want to do it, he'll let you figure it out. You fail, you try again. It's just like this. The mother is there. The mother's friends are all there. The baby for the first time gets up and starts to walk. What does it do? Yeah, falls over. And so all the ladies go, wow, look at that. Oh, my God, my kid's so useless. Yeah, what a stupid idiot. Is that what they do? No. So the kid gets up and tries again. Right? And he keeps trying till he gets it right. And the parents are very happy about that. So the problem is God doesn't have a problem that you made a mistake as long as you're trying to correct it. The baby makes a mistake, but it doesn't then get all mental about it. And think, oh, I can't walk, and, you know, I'm this and that. Oh, I'm so useless, you know. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't do that. It just gets up and tries again. So you make a mistake, then you figure out, okay, that was a mistake, how to correct that. Do it again until you get it right. But that point of liberation is not something, it's not all or nothing. We're not sitting, it's like this. One of the greatest, means that where you're very peaceful and about just comforting. Yes, one of the greatest comforting elements of spiritual life is God is not American. He does not work on this 100% or zero. You're either a pure, unalloyed devotee, untouched by that, or you're a complete, write-off. That, there's not even words to describe how disgusting you are. God is God, and He's able to accommodate even these modes like that. Is that you're trying, that's what's seen. You know what I'm saying? So those moments you are identifying, you're liberated. The moments you're not, you're not. You can move in and out of it. It's not that until I'm completely 100%. No, it's how much degree it's done, it's just that much done. Let us say you're cooking rice. It takes 10 minutes. It's been cooking for 2 minutes. How do you identify it? As 2 minutes cooked or 8 minutes uncooked? You know what I'm saying? Oh, it's partially done. It's partially cooked. We know it's uncooked, but the focus is on the cooked part. So those identifications with Krishna is what is seen. And the other parts are the parts that haven't developed yet. So as long as you're not proud, that's how it's seen. But as soon as you become proud, then it's like, hey, it's only 2 minutes cooked. Does that make sense? God is very kind as long as we reciprocate with that same moods. If someone's very kind, you should be humble. If someone's very kind, we become proud, it's a problem. Right? The parents are kind to the child, then they become puffed up. That's a problem. The parents are kind to the child. The child appreciates that and tries to render service and somehow or another be connected, do be useful. Then that's proper. You know what I'm saying? That's the element. Is that okay?
Yes. Yes, Maharaj. I'm confused about your pillar example.
The pillar example.
That is Lakshmi Devi discharging her service.
So you want to know why that one? Why not that one? But that's why it says Sahasra Koti Lakshmi, like that is. He's surrounded by thousands of, there's lots of pillars up there. Yes.
And you've also mentioned previously that it's actually just dead matter that's been infused by the universal form. Can you clarify the difference between the two descriptions?
There's a difference, then there's no difference. Means, in other words, there's Krishna and his Swarup Shakti. Right? Krishna is the complete form of Godhead. Swarup Shakti is the complete form of God's energy. So that includes all the energy. Does that make sense? So, therefore, then, depending upon how you are perceiving, in other words, material energy means the material energy is dead matter. Right? But it's not called dead matter, technically. It's pradhan. Right? We are dealing with the element of dead matter because we are seeing it separate from Krishna. You know what I'm saying? That's the problem, is that we see it as dead matter. We don't see it that this is the medium for Krishna's energy to hold something up. You know what I'm saying? This is the problem. We see form, we don't see the cause behind the form. Right? What is it, the two? There's the efficient cause, what's the other cause?
Material.
The material cause. So, we see the material cause, we don't actually see the efficient. Right? Is that we see the pillar, we just think, oh, the pillar there. Yeah, pillars hold things up. But how does the pillar hold it up? Because we can't build a pillar out of straw. There's only certain mediums that can hold the building up. Like that. And everybody will agree with that. So, therefore, is everything that is efficiently working is because it's the proper medium, and the degree of deficiency is how proper it is to carry that potency. You know what I'm saying? A bicycle has a certain amount of potency. A car has more of that. An airplane, more. You know what I'm saying? So, but they're all carrying that same potency of locomotion. Right? But still, those aren't as potent as, you know, the things where the, you know, the siddhas, they just move through space without anything. Or Narad Muni. Much more efficient. You know, he doesn't take any petrol. Right? Does that make sense? So there's always the form through which the energy is there. Does that make sense? So then there's a non-difference then between the two. Right? So then Lakshmi then is expanding, because he is performing the material pastimes. He is the creator. So that means she as his energy is the created. Right? And their interaction is what is dynamic. Right? Because Vrindavan is just sitting there. There's no interaction. Right? He's not interacting. She's not doing anything. He interacts, right, as Sadashiva. Then she starts to be active. Right? Then you have Mahat. Right? When Sadashiva interacts with Vrindavan, you have Mahat. That's the response. So the response of a Sadashiva is Vasudeva Sattva. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, Shiva's that position of being in the liberated state. Right? And then as then Brahman, the secondary creation, are created, then the response is there with all the different interactions. Right? The desires of the living entity are there. So therefore, all the primeval forms are made, and all the potencies of those primeval forms. Right? So then that's already going on. That interaction is already happening. Right? But now on the platform of the universal form. The universal form is interacting, you know, between himself and his energy. But it's through the medium of what is the material energy. So because she is Swarup, technically she is both. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, your head does one thing, your feet does another, but it's all the same person. You know what I'm saying? But of these, that interaction or that rasa is the greatest in the spiritual platform. Right? The mediums are the most perfect, and the expression is the most perfect. Right? But while here, then the mediums are inferior, and the expressions are inferior. Right? So the thing is then we're here in this, and being Tathasta, we can see either spiritual and material. So here, we can also see as the spiritual. Sukadeva Goswami is seeing it as spiritual. Because it's Brahman. It's not Bhagavan spiritual, it's Brahman spiritual. Right? Because it's Shantaras. It's everything we see, that's all technically the experiences of the Shantarasa. It's this field of activities in which things will go on. Right? So it has its natural form, the dham and everything there. And then here we have the material form. But it's the same potency. Just in its natural state of shanta, or, you know, which is coming from the sundini potency, or in its unnatural or in its perverted state of existence, which is ignorance. So therefore everything is conscious there, here, everything is dead matter. It's ignorant. But we then identify with the dead matter. And so we think, we just see the stuff, we don't see everything else that's going on. That's the problem. When you see all of everything in connection to Krishna, by some platform, right? This is the beginning intellectual platform to connect yourself. Right? We use that a lot because much of the time in the sentiment, our sentiments are so mixed that we need this intellectual element to be able to split it. Because the sentiment is, just connect your emotion to Krishna, the mind to Krishna. That's all you require. But along with that, we have our mind also connected to our family and our money and our position and our, you know, rubber ducky in the bathtub and whatever else it is. And because of that, then the emotion is mixed, so we never get there. So without the intellectual, how you'll know what to keep and what to not keep? Because many times people can't tell the difference. Sahajiyas can't tell the difference. Right, smartness can't tell the difference. Right, so both of one keeps one away from Krishna. Therefore, the intellectual process, this jnana yoga, is given so that one can properly distinguish. But it's connected to bhakti because you're doing it not because it'll get you liberated, not because you're intelligent and therefore you are comfortable engaging all that, and that's your purpose. You know, and not because, how you say, it's just the right thing to do, it's the pious, nice thing to do. You know, or it's not because it's the most efficient and it'll make my business work better. Like that, or I'll get better sense gratification. It's none of those, it's because it will please Krishna. Therefore, it's counted as bhakti. So, buddhi yoga includes karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga. Right? Then all those, because they're being done, used to please Krishna, it's all counted as bhakti yoga. We don't really make a distinction between bhakti yoga, karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, or the combination of all that as buddhi yoga. We can use any of those terms to mean the devotional process. It's just we'll use the term depending upon where we're emphasizing at the time. If it's a matter of your activities, we're talking karma yoga. Like this, we're intellectualizing on these things. This is jnana yoga. Jnana, how to absorb the mind in Krishna. Right? But then when these are combined in active service, right, action in Krishna consciousness, this is buddhi yoga. Right? And that will lead us then to prema. Or actually, we'll use it up to the point of liberation. Then we'll use bhava bhakti. Right? But below bhava, then buddhi yoga is the most efficient form to use. Does that make sense?
What does true forgiveness consist of and how to attain it? Because a lot of times you say, yeah, I forgive this person, but I don't forget. I will never forget. And then
forgive but don't forget. Isn't that the saying? Yes. That's right.
It jades the relationship because one always
remembers that.
So, and at the same time, being merciful to a person sometimes means that one avoids that person or one deals with them in a particular way. But as Vaishnavas, we try to attain the platform of
for true forgiveness.
So what does that consist of?
I mean, in a nutshell, because it's kind of at the end of the class, is that, see, is something has happened, some interactions happen that we don't appreciate. And so, but that interaction is actually the interaction of the field of activities. So if we identify with that field, then whatever happened in that field is actually very important. Right? If we don't identify with that field, then what happened is not actually so important. So then, you know, if there's some understanding of it, or, you know, we're having a good day or some good, you know, emotions, then we can maybe we forgive, but like you said, not forget. But that forget will is there is that we don't identify with that, with the element of the field. If it's like, okay, I'm a senior devotee, some junior devotee didn't deal properly. But then we're identifying with the field. We're identifying, I'm senior devotee field, they're junior devotee field. It's material.
There is minor sin, there's major sin, and there's cardinal sin. Maybe this is too Christian.
No, but cardinal sin is I and mine. I'm the controller and I'm enjoyer. That's the actual cardinal sin. So that's why we're here. All of the sin comes from that.
But still, in the material world, you distinguish between minor misgivings and
yes,
things which are
but,
really major, which would
But major is based on what? Major is killing a Brahmin or blaspheming a Brahmin or in some way insulting a Brahmin. Right? In that also comes killing a cow. Right? And sometimes even it's considered within the category, but lesser of that, most heinous of all crimes is killing a friend. So that would also include blaspheming a friend. Does our Western first world Christian attitude count those as cardinal sins? I don't think so. Blaspheming devotees is kind of like breathing for Westerners. You know what I'm saying? And they don't understand it's as bad as killing a cow or killing a Brahmin. They'll just say, oh, I'm just being practical, I'm just being truthful. But it's still the worst sin you can commit in the material world. And if you've done it by accident, just the emotions came up or something like that, then you can be purified of it. If you've done it intentionally and you mean it and you want it to stick, there's nothing that can purify you. Nothing material. The only thing is chanting Hare Krishna. And that's only when Krishna is going to let you go for it. So there's no atonement for that. Sins of moral sins means if you're having sex with the guru's wife, then it's one of the major sins, right? Like that. Or with a cow, or with, how you say, an unmarried girl. Then these are major. But if it's not in that category, then they're considered minor sins.
What about child abuse?
There's going to be a problem here because there's no understanding of the levels of sin and how they work. It wouldn't be able to be explained. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is these things what I'm saying don't actually mean anything to the Western conditioning. So the hierarchy of sins won't actually mean anything. Because it's said that, you know, how you say you wouldn't eat onions and garlic, leeks, onion, I mean, all these other things, mushrooms, they wouldn't be ingested. You know, so, but those are very minor sins. But you can lose your brahminical status from that, but they're considered minor sins. Like within the minor sins, you have, I think it's five different categories. So to be able to understand these things, is this would have to mean something to you. Because the general problem is in the Western mentality, is it's all this or it's just nothing. So if I say it's primary, then it's worth getting your head cut off. If I say secondary, it means you don't take it seriously. So the conditioning you're dealing with here actually clouds the ability to be just. You know what I'm saying? Because generally in the Vedic thing is there isn't really so much the element of child abuse. It's more of a tribal thing. Like that. And if you're not fitting within the four varnas, you are tribal. You know what I'm saying? Sophisticated, but tribal. So then, in here, then you come up with these mixes of things. So then you have to consider what's been done, how much has been done, what are the mentalities of the people, what is the, what is the mentalities of the people, meaning what is their natures, how much were they involved, meaning consensual or non-consensual. Consensual, then it drops it quite seriously. Non-consensual, then it keeps it quite serious. Because even though it may be a minor sin, it still, depending upon your mentality, may result in very severe punishment. You know, capital punishment, corporal punishment, banishment, all these different things. But it very much depends upon who it is. Like that. So that's not accepted. It'll be said, oh, you did this, that's not brahminical. But if you say, well, what is brahminical, and how would you deal with the Brahmin, that's not there. You know what I'm saying? So it's totally inconsistent. So you can't actually answer the question nicely. Because all these, unless they're considered, you can't come to a proper judgment. And unless you consider all these, if you come to a judgment, then what is shortfall on it, you will get the reaction for. And it can destroy you, your family, your area of your direct service, and even your area of service. You know what I'm saying? The temple president deals wrong on justice. It can destroy his life, his wife and family's life, the devotees in the temple, and even the temple community. That's not known. Everybody deals with it as if it's a joke, at the same time as they take it so seriously. So until these mentalities are corrected, you can't actually get too much into the definition of that, because we were giving an example there. But otherwise, this whole thing of justice and punishment is a very large topic that only very qualified people can understand. Qualified means that any devotee can understand it, because being naturally a devotee, being a Brahmin, then it works as long as they're acting on the devotional platform. Otherwise, in their conditioned nature, it has to be Brahmin or Kshatriya. Otherwise, forget it. Like that. High-end Vaishyas, yes, they can be kings like Nanda Maharaj. They can also understand it, because they also have to give justice. But anybody below that, don't even bother, because their own conditioning will throw the whole thing out of proportion to such a point that it doesn't function. It doesn't matter, because they think that's okay. Material energy is material energy. You think the fire shouldn't burn the little baby, it will anyway. So you think, well, I can make this decision, it doesn't matter, it's for Krishna. No, it's not. Because your decision is based on your own conditionings. Therefore, then the reaction of that is going to come to you. Unless it was correct according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then you're getting a reaction. That's all. It's that simple. So that's why justice has to be dealt with very, very carefully, and only by those persons who are qualified to deal with it. That's why the common person doesn't take these things into their own hands. Right? They leave it up to the authorities to deal with it. Right? You deal with it in your own family, your own little circle, but with all these considerations, then it works nice. But on these bigger things and all that, then if you don't know what you're doing with, you'll get burned. So the difficulty is, this is not a philosophical point, this is a cultural point. And because of the identifying so strongly, as we're saying here, with the modern, you know, culture, especially the, you know, Protestant is the prominent element of the first world culture. It means it doesn't mean you can be any religion, but the whole social economic thrust is Protestant, meaning it's just you and your feelings, right? Because that's what Protestant is me and God and my Bob. It's more trying to be Rog, not so Vaidhi like the Catholics were. But in that, the bottom line is, as Narada Muni pointed out to Vyasadeva, you're going to drop the actual purpose of it. You know, the Mahabharata is trying to get you Krishna conscious, and you're just going to see the material side of it and forget the God conscious. So in the same way as they're going to, it's just my Bob. What I want to do is all, that's reality. Right? And that works very nicely with the sophist, you know, the sophistry of Vox Populi, is that this is what I feel. If I can find other people that feel like that, that's truth. So then with this combination of the sophistry, you know, and the emotional element of the Protestant, that culture is totally devastating to any sense of authority, because that's the first thing they go after. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? That's the first thing that's gone after, is any kind of authority. Shastra, Prabhupada, previous authorities, anything like that. Varnashram. It's all just thrown in like that. It's the first thing to go, because it's just your mood. And then whatever I feel and my friends feel, that's true. So therefore, if we establish this as law, it's correct. But this is all coming from identifying, the mind identifying with these things. Because if one doesn't, then the whole point is, if I'm servant of Krishna, therefore, then all this has to be pleasing to Krishna, so it has to be coming down from Krishna. So what does Krishna say in the Shastra? What does Prabhupada say? These would be the prominent elements. What is the example Prabhupada set? What are the previous acharyas set? Then we would start looking at it from that angle. And that's a completely different flavor. Like that. So then that's the point is, then that would, I guess, then go back to the answering the question of the mood, is that the forgiving and not forgetting means that the form is there, but not the actual mood of it. We haven't taken the identity, I'm servant of Krishna, so therefore it doesn't really matter. But on that, still, as a practical point, is the forget doesn't mean you're stupid. In other words, if they've proven themselves that they can be forgiven, right, then in the way, yeah, then they are forgiven and you forget about it. But it doesn't mean that if any symptoms come up of their previous behavior that wasn't correct, you're not at that point not defending against it. Doesn't mean you just are open in trust and therefore you get run over. This is not a sentimental thing. You use your intelligence. So as long as there's no symptom of it, you leave yourself open. As a relationship, you have to leave yourself open. But as soon as a little bit of something pops its head up, to that degree you pop up your defense. You know what I'm saying? But it's not from the past, you're dealing with the present. You've forgotten about the past doing wrong, but you know that they could do this, so it's just there. And if they do it, then you deal with it. If they don't deal with it, it's not dealt with. Like that. So that's the problem, is that it's either you have to protect yourself and feel bad towards them, or throw it all out and leave yourself completely open and then get you know, trashed again, and then lose more faith in, you know, relationships and God and everything like that. And like that. But intelligence means it's a balance. You forgive, you forget, and as long as nothing shows up. Like Romaharshan Sutta, he's a Sutta. So technically speaking, he's Varnashankara, which puts him outside Varnashram. But being a Sutta, that means his father's a Kshatriya, the mother's a Brahmin, then they could, by association, by the nature of the parents, the mentality, he could take up Brahminical activities very nicely, he could take up Kshatriya activities and be a great king. You know, he could take up, be a chariot driver, like that, or he could go out and snare small animals. You know, these are the mentalities that would work with this. So, therefore, the Vedic would be, he's Varnashankara, but where will he fit? So you see, so Romaharshana Sutta behaves as a Brahmin. So he's accepted as one, and everybody forgives and forgets about his past. Right? But as soon as, you know, Balaram comes into the assembly and he doesn't stand up due to pride, right? Because that pride wouldn't come from the Brahmins or Kshatriyas if a superior came. So that has to become, a chariot driver also would not be proud of superior coming, because that's what he does. He serves on that mode of nobility and all that. So it would have to be dropping down into the, you know, small animal snare mentality. So therefore then they just go, well, he was a Sutta anyway. You know, it happens. You know, and so then they move on. You know, but until that point, no one ever brought it up. In fact, all the 18 Puranas are spoken by either Romaharshana Sutta or his son, Ugrashava Sutta. You know, they're not spoken by some other Brahmin or this. They're all spoken by the Suttas. So when they're on that platform, no one thinks about it. Nobody cares. You know, just like the devotees. They're from whatever country, from whatever background, this and that. Nobody cares. Like that. But the same not caring still applies even as a devotee if they make a mistake. This idea is that, oh, whatever you did before, we can forgive that, but anything as a devotee, that can't be forgiven. It doesn't make sense. How it is that, okay, someone made some kind of mistake, sensual mistake, or this or that kind of mistake, and that's so big, but somehow or another eating a million cows is just let off like that? It doesn't make sense. That's what I'm saying, is that it's very hard to bring about what Vedic adjudication on things if the mentality isn't seen in balance. You know what I'm saying? Because they'll just write off having eaten cows so easily. you know, but then someone else ran off someone else's wife, and that's it, they're eternally damned. Well, how is that? It says, you know, it's like somehow or another, that one you can just figure out, this was stupid, and get back to normal. The other one, even you think it's stupid, it's going to be in your genes for 2.5 generations. Your grandchildren will be freed from your sin of eating cows. It takes that long. The other thing is just, okay, you get rid of that. You know what I'm saying? So that's why, therefore, the Vedas, understanding these, they give different ways of dealing with the punishments that the modern mentality would not have an understanding at all with, because they look at the gross. They don't understand subtle at all. You know, if you're a Supreme Court judge, they deal with that. High Court judges are supposed to be able to deal with that. But your common vigilante with pitchforks and torches doesn't have any understanding of this at all. You're green, you have pointy ears, you know, they go and burn your house down. You know, like that, that's all. That's, they don't understand, maybe the, you know, the orc is a nice guy. You know, like that. They can't understand that. Like that. They can only see form. They can't understand mentalities behind the form. Because until you can understand the gross and the subtle, you're unqualified to make a judgment. Does that make sense? So that's why then in this case is, don't worry about his mentality, worry about your own. I can forgive. I'm in control of that. But I'm also in control of protecting myself by not being stupid. So as long as they don't show any symptoms of behaving badly, I'll deal with them nicely. And they reciprocate nicely, it goes on. Great. But as soon as they show any symptoms of behaving badly, I will protect myself from their bad behavior. It doesn't mean I initially throw it into, oh, you did this, this, this. No. You just deal with what's right now. Is that okay? Okay. 1, 2. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakta Brinda ki, Jainatai Gaur Premanandi.
After that, you continue with the